This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Hannah Worldwide and Friends, the podcast about living abroad. If you live abroad, or you love to travel, or you are interested in different countries and cultures, this podcast is for you. Also, if you always wanted to live abroad, but you haven't found the courage yet, this podcast might inspire you. Just follow me on Instagram or hit the bell button in Spotify to get updated on new episodes. Listen to Hannah Worldwide and Friends on Spotify, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast. Hi everyone, please welcome with me Coral Ramiro from Spain. Coral has left Spain to live for 8 years in London, where she also met her partner. As she wanted a career change from interior design to a more environmental job, like growing vegetables, they thought Australia and New Zealand would be a good place to start this journey. They spent 1 year in Australia before they entered New Zealand in August 2019. Hi Coral.
Hello.
I'm so sorry. It's sometimes harder for me to pronounce your name properly in Spanish, but as you mentioned, it's absolutely okay for me to say it in the English version as well.
Yep, no problem.
So I probably keep going with the English version, even though I find your Spanish name really nice. It sounds really lovely.
That's fine. I'm used to it.
Yeah, I'm still trying, so that you don't feel like you have to change your name for the people around you.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's just a different language, so it's the way you would pronounce the word in that language. So I can understand you are speaking English right now.
Thank you. But also, I introduce myself as Johanna and not Joanna. Okay. Yeah. Because for me, I'm so, like, this is how I know myself, and that's why I'm like, okay, I would love to at least try to say it properly.
That makes sense, yep.
But thank you so much for having some time for me to talk about your life story and your story of why you came to New Zealand and why you even left your country in the first place. So that's actually my first question for you. Why did you decide to leave Spain and then move over to London?
Job opportunities, sadly. So I finished my degree just after the 2008 recession hit Spain and most of Europe.
Yeah.
I had already been to the UK a couple of summers before. I don't know why, don't ask me why, but I've always been like drawn towards the UK. Yeah. Doesn't make any sense because I'm Spanish. I love the sun. I love the heat.
Yeah.
And it was kind of the obvious choice for me because I wanted to learn English and because obviously it is the, you know, the main language that.
Yeah.
You must learn if you, you know, want to live abroad. So yeah. I thought, well, it's not that far away from Spain. If things don't go as I want them to, then I can always go back to Spain.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's probably the culture over there and the music. I've always loved the music. I've always loved the arts scene from England, well, the UK in general. And my background is actually in interior design.
Yeah.
So I thought, what better place than London to try to become an interior designer?
Yeah.
And yeah, so I did what probably half of Europe did, which was moving to London and then trying to get a job in my field And that took a very, very long time. I jumped from typical jobs that you have after uni, so retail. I did a lot of internships because that's the sad story about the arts industry, that you do a arty degree and then you end up doing a lot of internships that most of them are not even paid.
Yeah.
So I finally got a job in interior design and then didn't like it.
Oh no.
I thought it could have been where I worked. People weren't that friendly and yeah, it just didn't feel like a place I wanted to be in. So then I moved away from that. I worked in a prop hire company. So this is a giant warehouse with lots of furniture and little pieces of decor where set designers would come and then hire it to take to a TV set or a movie set. And there I was kind of like a visual designer. Is it visual designer? Like a display assistant sort of. So we would put, you know, not sets, but like a small, it's almost like when you go to IKEA and you can see what the kitchen would look like.
So you would set it up kind of?
Yeah, in a very small way. It's not like IKEA. We were mainly a warehouse with a lot of the pieces. So we just made sure that they would all be displayed nicely. And then from time to time, we would make displays as well to showcase new products and things like that. And I was at that moment, I was still living in London and I, for some reason, well, I lived in a tiny flat, like a lot of people do in London, sharing a flat with many people. And because I didn't really want to pay that much rent, I ended up living in a flat that literally had no living room. So in London, a good way to make extra money for a landlord is to turn the living room into another bedroom.
Oh my God. Yeah, I've heard a little bit.
Yeah. So we only had a kitchen and we were four people living together. So I had no sort of place where I could just not be in my room or even like outdoors because it was a flat. So I started craving being outdoors. Even though I grew up in a flat myself with no balcony, no nothing in Spain. And what happened is that I love animals and it happened to, so there was a city farm not that far away from where I was living. So I started volunteering as an animal volunteer. So cleaning the stables, they had donkeys and chickens and geese. So I was just scooping poop every Sunday for probably 4 to 5 hours. And I loved it. And then I realized, well, while I'm volunteering, I can actually get some life skills. So I decided to move on to the growing team. So there I learned everything from seed sowing, planting, harvesting, and it was really, really good for me and I enjoyed it so much that then I thought, well, actually, I can actually try to get away from interior design. Well, at that point I was just a visual assistant. And yeah, because it was so good to have my hands in the ground and it was so good to be surrounded by these people that were so knowledgeable. But not only about growing food, they were so in touch with our food system. And that's one thing that I noticed as a Spanish person when I moved to London. Not that I was really in touch with how my food was being grown, but I feel like in Spain we still have such a big food culture that, you know, our produce, our, you know, fruit and veggies are relatively fresh. And when I moved to London, I was in shock of such bad quality produce. So I started learning all these things about where, you know, where all the food was being grown, how it was being grown. I knew about organics, but yeah, and also animal, you know, exploitation in farms. And so it really opened my eyes. And then at that point, my partner and I, as you said, we wanted to go traveling. So he is also a bit of a traveler.
Yeah.
And we wanted, because he's English, but he doesn't really like the weather either. So I voted Australia and he voted New Zealand. So
I see.
So we did the first year in Australia, because obviously coming from Europe is closer.
Yeah.
So we went to Australia with a working holiday visa for a year. And once that was finished, we came to New Zealand, and technically we were going to stay in this country for only 1 year, and then COVID happened. It was that decision of, do we stay here? Do we go back? When there were all these flights being arranged by governments, sending people back to their own countries, because yeah. New Zealand was closing their borders.
Yeah.
So, because I had a job, Peter at that time, he was traveling around the South Island, yeah. and he actually got stuck down there.
Oh God.
Yeah. So because I had a job in a farm, in a, you know, organic vegetable farm that I loved.
Yeah.
In my head, I thought, well, what am I doing going back to Europe, where it seems to be that is the worst out of, you know, the whole world in terms of COVID numbers.
Yeah.
Compared to New Zealand, it just didn't make any sense. It was tough because we don't really have a support network in this country. It's just Peter yeah. and I. We don't have family. So it was, yeah, it was tough decision. I guess it was a more rational decision.
Yeah.
But in a way, I don't really regret it. Yeah.
That's...
Sorry, that was very long.
No, you probably already answered, like, most of my questions.
Okay, sorry.
No, that's all good. Like, I don't even need to ask. You're already, like, knowing what interests me.
Oh, okay.
It's really interesting, just when I go back to when you talked about London, you coming from Spain, feeling quite in touch with your country and your culture, going to London, obviously very different, but... And yeah, the weather no one really likes, I guess.
Nope.
But you lived there for 8 years, which is still quite a long time for not being too sure yeah. if you like it there, right?
Mm, yeah, yeah.
The other interesting part is you have kind of a career.
Mm.
You studied for it. And what I like about these days is that even if you have a career, you studied that, you don't have to stay in it if you don't like it, because how many people don't really know what they want to do, and then they just choose something. And it's so nice to see that everyone has the choice of actually changing careers, no matter in what kind of journey they are and what time of their life, pretty much.
Mm-mm.
And from interior design to completely like being outdoors. And even if you, as you said, you loved just like doing, like cleaning out the poop from the animals.
Yeah.
Even that brought you joy, while the interior design job or even just the visual kind of assistant didn't really bring you or didn't really give you any happiness. So it's nice to see how different it can be. And sometimes it's just not the right fit for us, and finding something which actually makes us feel good and happy.
Yeah.
Which you now did with your farm is like pretty amazing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you asked me back then when I was studying interior design that I was going to become a farmer, I would have laughed at you. Yeah. But funnily enough, in Spain, I don't remember at what age they do it, but at my school, they gave us this, it wasn't a test, but you had to fill in this form with very basic questions that would obviously tell you what the answer was going to be.
Yeah.
It was just about finding out, what you wanted to become.
Yeah.
When you finished school, and funnily enough, my answer was farmer.
No way.
Yeah. So I thought, what? No, I don't want to be a farmer. But I guess the questions were, do you like to be outdoors? Do you like animals? And then, you know, my answers just led to that. Yeah. But I don't know, I grew up with my dad being in like the building industry. So that he was always taking me to building sites, and I really enjoyed that creativity process where he was, you know, at that time drawing by hand. Yeah. All these sketches of like what something could look like after a refurbishment. And I loved it. And I generally think that there are skills that can transfer from interior design to farming, in the sense that it's, you have to be very creative. Yeah. And farming, there's a lot of DIY jobs, and you have to think outside of the box all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, because obviously, you know, farmers and farms don't make that much money. So if you are able to creatively come out of a problem, that's just a win for you.
Yeah.
And I think, and that's the thing about where I work, nobody in the farm has a horticultural background. It's just people that are passionate about growing food the way we do it. And yeah, that's enough for us. The, you know, the skills, you can learn them, but the passion, you will never be able to learn it.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. Passion is, or I guess people sometimes are afraid, they never really like realize what their passion is. Mm. But if you enjoy something so much and you think back and you just remember, this is actually what I liked about it. Like you said, you like to be outdoors and you like the creative part of Mm-mm. the job of your dad. And that led you to do the interior design. But at the end of the day, as you said, it's pretty interchangeable. Is that the right word?
Transferable. Yeah. Interchangeable. Yeah.
You also have the creativity. You are outdoors. And I guess the word farming, at least that's my experience, when you are a farmer in Europe, it doesn't really have like a good reputation.
Mm.
It sounds more like someone who is not really necessarily much educated, even though it's not the reality, but that's kind of the reputation, and you don't make money and all of that. And it's really hardworking job, and kind of for what?
Yeah.
And I guess when you had that test and it said farming, you were like, no, thank you.
Definitely not. Yeah, definitely not.
But yeah, can you tell us a little bit more about the system of the farming you do here in New Zealand now?
Mm. So I work in a certified organic farm, and at the same time, we grow regeneratively. It's a very tricky word to say. And so what we do is that we focus on the soil health of the farm. So our focus is in the soil microbiology. So that is just the group of microorganisms that live in the soil, and they help the plant, you know, get its nutrients, defend itself against diseases, pests. And it's something that has been overlooked for many, many years in conventional farming. And yeah, so we do it in different ways. So we grow our plants in a system that is called polycropping.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of having a bed full of just beetroot, we will have tomato, beetroot, basil, parsley, spring onion, lettuce with it. And that's because all these plants are sending sugars, exudates, down into the soil.
Yeah.
And those sugars are attracting different kinds of microbiology.
Yeah.
So like everything in nature, diversity is always beneficial.
Yeah.
So the wider the variety of plants that we grow in within the square meter, the better the higher the diversity is going to be of that microbiology, which in return is going to benefit us as farmers, because it means that you rely on less inputs. And we also, so we don't till, so we don't disturb the soil, which is mainly the reason why most of the horticultural soils all around the world are so low in microbiology, because there's this constant harm that we do to the soil. And then the initial job of the microbiology is to fix that soil.
Yeah.
So then that's why farmers need to put in nitrogen, fertilizers, and all sorts of inputs to get anything out of that soil, because that microbiology isn't there. If there is, it's trying to fix the soil, which is really hard on it.
So
we don't till. We try to protect the soil as much as possible. No bare soil, because obviously, as I mentioned before, plants send sugars down to the microbiology. If those sugars are not there, then they can't feed themselves on from anything. So they just go dormant and then eventually they'll die.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that we inoculate the soil. So because of what I said, our soil health is not really bad, but obviously it needs a bit of a kickstart. So yeah. It's almost like making yogurt, right? So you need to put your culture in to then get this whole yogurt full of like these bacteria, good, good stuff. So we kind of like need to do that on a constant basis.
Yeah.
So we're just supporting the soil microbiology as much as we can. And yeah, it's a really good place to work. The people, the family that own the land, they're very open to anything that I've suggested to do. And as I said, because nobody has a background in horticulture, it's just everyone's really open to try new things. And it's a really good working environment.
I can't believe that I only had this conversation now. Like, I have met you quite a few times now.
Yeah.
And I knew that you are on a farm, but we never really talked about that so deeply.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting.
It's not really a, you know, a conversation that you would have over dinner. It's not something that would just come up casually. Soil microbiology.
How is the soil?
Yeah, exactly. So, but it is, I think, more and more people, especially when we open the farm for people to come in and have a look, they are fascinated.
Yeah.
Because as I said, it's not that mainstream to look into the soil microbiology. Everybody hears about fertilizers and all these kind of stuff. So it's really interesting to see their faces when we explain. And they're very, very grateful to know that they don't need to double dig, or they don't have to till their soil.
Do you do also like workshops for other people or something like that?
So on the open days, we normally do a bit of a tour of the farm and a workshop. They normally, so we try to do one every 3 months, so season, like spring, summer. And then during winter, we tend to do a bit more because it's quieter at the farm, so we can actually dedicate more time.
Yeah.
It just gets a bit chaotic once spring kicks in. Yeah.
It's so cool that it comes up now. And I often listen to a podcast which is like based around health, which is from Jay Shetty.
Okay.
I always mention him because he's pretty much one of the main podcasts I'm listening to. And he is having really interesting guests on his show as well. And quite often also people who are medically really knowledgeable, or doctors or something like that. And it's so interesting how often the topic soil comes up now and is describing how important it is to have the proper healthy soil and the minerals in the soil. Because that's what we, like, when the plants and the vegetables grow in the soil, they get the nutrients and everything. And mm-hmm. if we then consume it, we also get the health benefits of the vegetables we eat.
Yep.
And yep. nowadays, as you said, it's not really like that anymore because of the mass production and all of that. It's mainly how can we grow it faster, more and cheaper
yep.
and fertilizing, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to it used to be a proper healthy soil and we would have vegetables and we would get the health benefits of it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not like this anymore. And trying to go back to the time where it was like, as you said, looking after the soil more is so cool that we finally talk about it as well.
Yay. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is a big problem in our food system. And I mean, you can see it, especially in like Western countries, how there's so many people with so many illnesses and allergies. And they pretty much, I'm just overestimating, but maybe it'd be like 90% of them, I would say, comes from the food that they eat.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many layers of this. It's just people not having access to actually fresh produce to feed themselves on, the way things are being grown. So as you said, things are being grown for the aesthetics of it, no yeah. longer for the nutrition. So people are literally eating almost like sterile,
pretty food.
it's just pretty something that doesn't, and also because it is so easy now to import food from the other side of the world.
Yeah.
We don't eat seasonally any longer. So we are part of the system. We are part of an ecosystem. So our bodies should be eating seasonal food because it complements the seasons. So that's why, you know, you have your oranges in winter and yeah. you need vitamin C in winter. There's so many nutrients and vitamins that come from our food that are there to help us go through that season.
Yeah.
And we're no longer doing that. Yeah. So it's,
yeah,
it's a very long topic.
Oh yeah. And it's a very interesting topic and coming to the food we eat, the gut health, how the gut health has to do with your mental health, like all these systems where people are usually not really, like most people who are not looking into it deeper because they're interested in it, don't even know about. But so many diseases, as you said, can be healed by actually looking back to the food we eat.
Yeah, I think it's just society. So if you look back however many decades ago, let's say like 40, at least in my country, I'm going to speak for my country.
Yeah.
You know, there's a housewife and she will go to the market and she will cook for the family. You know, households only needed one income, right? Yeah. Now, if you talk to anyone that is 30 in Spain, they will have two incomes going into the house.
Yeah.
There's no longer a housewife.
Yeah.
It's just a couple living together or a family.
Yeah.
So that means is that there isn't that much time to put into the cooking, into yeah. going to the market. And yeah, that's causing a lot of issues. I am not saying that
you want everyone to be
a housewife, but it's also the fact that because of the cost of living's gone so high, people need to work full time in order yeah. to be to be able to pay their mortgage.
Yeah.
So and that's it is affecting, at least when I look at my own country, my friends would be that way. And it's very easy to just get a takeaway or get something yeah. from the supermarket that is already been made.
Yeah, yeah. Like the instant food kind of yeah. went up. because as you said, society, everything needs to be fast. No one has really much time to put much effort into cooking, and people just want it immediately.
And it's also, you know, it's we will lose, I don't know if to call it cooking knowledge, but you know, my grandma, she would cook all sorts of things. I don't know how to cook half of them.
Yeah, same.
So that's something else that is slowly getting lost.
Yeah.
That cultural culinary knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's time. Yeah. We don't have time.
Yeah, everything is, yeah, needing time.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when my partner sometimes comes, he's like cooking whatever he likes.
Mm-hmm.
But he's coming from an Asian household, and he cooked a lot with his mom when he was younger. And what I really love to see is sometimes he brings food back home, and it's like from a vegetable I've never seen before,
mm-hmm.
or from a plant which I usually would never eat, because in my mind it's not something to eat. But they use it for a soup, and it's really good and mm-hmm. has lots of health benefits. And it's so interesting, and I'm so glad that he keeps a little bit of that with him, like the knowledge, and preserves it and uses it.
Yeah.
Because as he said, it's just going away. I don't know much of what my grandma cooked, to be honest. And she had so many amazing dishes.
Yeah. I think that's another part of why I got into farming, is because I love food. That is the one thing that, if I'm going away, when we lived in London, you know how it is in Europe, that you can hop on a plane and in 2 hours be in a completely different country, different cuisine. And he would plan places to go and visit. I would check places to go and eat or where are the food markets.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just fascinating to see a completely different kind of vegetable and tasting, or the same vegetable and seeing it cooked completely different than the way that you would do it. I would travel all around the world just eating every single dish I could.
Yeah, yeah.
Generally. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I can see my partner in you. When we travel, he's not a big travel fan, but when we travel, I would get him with food and he would be interested in the food. And I would be interested in probably almost everything else.
Okay.
But that's probably how I can try to get him to travel with me again. But yeah, I guess for me, I was always a really picky eater.
Okay.
And therefore, I was always like, careful what I eat. And then I developed some, I don't know if it's a food allergy, but I developed really strong pain to certain food I ate, and I never really figured out which food it is. And so it's like,
ooh, that sounds not fun.
Yeah, it's you try to be really careful what you eat, and if you go to another country, you are also not sure what they add into and if your stomach might not like it, and then you have extreme pain. So that's why I don't necessarily look too much into food, even though I love a good meal.
Yeah, yeah.
But as a foodie, I can totally understand why just everything you do now is just benefiting you and makes you happier. You mentioned also that you were thinking to go back and you just wanted to stay here for a year. How has that changed now? What's your, like, I wouldn't say long-term plan, because I have the feeling you might not have a long-term plan, but what's the next few years looking like for you?
Yeah, so I don't really have a long-term plan. I'm the most undecisive person. I don't know if that word exists. I can't make my mind up. And what happens is that I always say that I'm going to do something and that doesn't happen. For example, moving to the UK to only just learn English and then work for a year or so, get the experience for my CV. That's what everybody said back then.
Yeah.
And then go back to Spain. And 8 years later, I'm still in the country.
Yeah.
We definitely know that we don't want to stay in New Zealand because it's very, very far away from family and friends. We definitely miss the culture a lot. So I am currently studying so microbiology. So I need to finish this course first.
Yeah.
And then after that, we'll decide when we're going. I decided to study soil microbiology because I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah.
It was within the same kind of like industry. So I wasn't moving away from farming, changing careers again. I wasn't doing that. And mainly because I have issues with my back. I got into farming quite late.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got to New Zealand when I was 31. So I guess my body, and I'm quite tall and slim and I have no muscles. So, my core strength is very, very bad, like very weak.
Yeah.
So when I hurt my back, I kind of like decided, I was thinking about studying the course, but hurting my back was kind of like a sign of maybe you can't carry on doing labor work any longer. So I really want to stay within the industry because I think that food has a lot of power. And I want to now become a consultant to help farmers transition from conventional farming to organic or biological farming, which is the kind of like farming that we're doing at the farm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there isn't a long-term plan at all. For me, it was, I would like to become a consultant and help others to either educate small-scale farmers on microbiology or just join a company, becoming a consultant. But I don't know how easy that's going to be because obviously I don't have a science degree. So it will depend on how open-minded the company will be because at the end of the day, this is a course that is run by the Soil Food Web school by Dr. Lane Ingham. So it's not a uni accredited course.
Yeah.
So it depends on what country I'm in. I know that the UK, it's not so, workplaces are not so focused on what degree you have. It's more like the experience. But in Spain, I know for a fact that a lot of the requirements for a job application will be that you have a degree in kind of like the field first.
Yeah.
So no idea because I generally, when I got into farming, my dream was to have my own farm and, you know, sell veggies, but my body is telling me that that might not be possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a really cool idea and I can totally see you in there, but also just the fact that you kind of go with the flow and like with your body now telling you it's no longer the right thing to do the labor. Finding something which might still kind of help you with your purpose of educating people and helping people and making it healthier, and I think that's a really cool idea. So I'm really hoping that Europe is a little bit more open because I know as well how hard it is if you don't have the degree, if you don't have the title, then it's really hard sometimes to get into a company. And here I experienced the opposite as well. They will see your experience, see you as a person, and then give you a chance.
Yeah.
And that's what I really enjoy here as well. So I really hope it works out for you, but I can totally see that being a good one for you.
Good. I'm glad you can see that. Well, not just me.
Well, yeah, I'm a really visual person and just, you know, picturing it and just feeling yourself into it, I think is really strong sometimes as well.
Manifesting. I should be manifesting more often. Yep.
Exactly. That's what I try to do as well. So thanks a lot for sharing the part with the farming and your kind of future or potential future. But I remember a conversation we had at dinner accurate. And I just can't forget about it. So I really wanted to ask you again.
What is it? Oh, now I'm scared.
So recently you went back to Spain.
Yep.
Just for a visit because we all haven't been over there to see family and friends because of the pandemic.
Yep.
And you just came back when we met and you mentioned how much of a cultural shock you got and how different everything was and how even though you're from Spain, you needed to get used to your own culture again.
Yep.
And I really want to dive into that a little bit deeper. So what is like, how was that for you going back to Spain?
It was really good. It was, you know, it was very happening place, something that obviously living here, it is a bit of a shock because population of this country is 5 million, which is basically, I think that's either half or the actual population of Madrid, which is the capital of Spain. You also have to realize that I left Spain 2010. And I went back for holidays and things like that. But I think what happens as well when you move to another country, you start blending in or trying to blend in.
Yeah.
So, your personality kind of like changes a bit.
Yeah.
So you lose the traits from your own culture. So, you know, if you speak with someone that's Spanish, they'll be loud and very, they'll use their hands a lot when speaking. And I don't know if I was just too conscious about it, but you know, I've become more, when I speak English, at least I become more serious. And I remember watching or listening to someone saying, you are a completely different person speaking different languages. So for example, me talking in Spanish versus me talking in English, we look like two completely different people. So that's what's happened to me. I've lived in the UK, then Australia, then New Zealand, and the common factor about them is that it's Anglo countries, right? So both Australia and New Zealand were colonized by the British, so there's a lot of those cultural things that have trickled into the other places where I've lived. So things like, you know, like saying thank you and please and sorry, and queuing up, those kind of things are quite overlooked in Spain. So I think the first shocking thing for me was that I felt that Spanish people were quite rude, very loud. We went to a couple of restaurants and it was really hard to listen to the person that I was talking to.
Yeah.
We also do this thing that obviously within, you know, a couple of days me being there, I was doing it already. You would be sat at a table with 8 people and you're having these like conversations from one corner to the table to the other corner, and then there's other person having that other conversation, these crossing conversations and mannerisms with our hands that for other cultures might look quite rude but also like intrusive, like pointing with your fingers, that kind of stuff that you don't realize when you live there. And then when you move away and you go back, you think, okay. Time as well. So we were there in September, which over there, that's the end of, I think it's the beginning of autumn. Yeah. So it was still fairly warm.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, eating times in Spain are completely different than the UK, Australia or New Zealand. And, Yeah, I was in a bit of a shock because lunch over there is 2 p.m.
Yeah.
And what I told you about is that it's not that usual anymore, but if, for example, a shop is owned by a family, most shops that are not chains, like Zara or, you know, they will shut at 2 o'clock and then open at 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
And those 2 hours is for you to go home or to go to a restaurant to have lunch.
Yeah.
So funnily enough, we tried to do so many things around that time and everything would be closed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that tells you how much we enjoy our food and how much time we give it. But at the same time, yeah, we had this conversation of thinking, oh, wow, okay, so the shop opens around 10 o'clock, closes at 2, then back again at 4, and then closes at 8. So that's pretty much your whole day.
Yeah.
So I guess, I don't know if it's because I've lived in the UK and here that I'd rather start early in the morning and then finish early in the afternoon and then just have the rest of the day for myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just different lifestyles. People, and I guess the speed of things is completely different over there as well. One memory that I have when I landed in Heathrow was just getting off the plane and, you know, you're walking to the passport control or whatever that it was. And I was just cruising by because this country is just sweet ass, you know, chill.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden everyone was walking very fast and all of a sudden I was walking really fast and I didn't know why I was walking that fast, but I was. And it took me like a minute to realize that all of a sudden I was just speeding up for no reason.
Yeah.
And I guess that's another thing. Like here, and I mean, we do work for fast in the farm, but I guess it's just a completely, I feel like Spain and New Zealand have a lot of similarities in terms of the character of the people.
Yeah.
It's just more chilled, and if something doesn't get done on that day, that's not a problem. Yeah. You know, she'll be all right kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess it was the, and also because I work in a farm, I go to bed fairly early.
Yeah.
Whereas when I was in Spain, it would be 10:30, 11 o'clock on a Tuesday night and people would still be out having dinner and drinks. And that's, I mean, I remember being a child and not being in bed any earlier than 11 o'clock if it was a weekend.
Yeah.
But it goes also with the heat, you know, it's especially summer nights can be at least like 30 something degrees.
Yeah.
So you don't feel like eating
when
it's that hot. So yeah, it just goes with the weather.
Yeah, so the life shifts more to the evening and night.
Yeah.
And then everyone is taking it slow in the morning and has a nice lunch break.
Yeah, just have your coffee at 10 a.m. Yeah. But at the same time, I have friends that work in offices and they will start at 9 o'clock and they will finish around 5 o'clock. So it depends on what kind of job you have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever had like any problems with having a partner from a completely different culture, especially in the beginning? Oh, okay. I see. There must be something.
Oh, well, it's not a problem. Oh, kind of it is. So he doesn't speak Spanish at all.
Yeah.
So the main thing is that when we go back to Spain, my parents don't speak English either.
Yeah.
And it is quite tiring for your brain to be constantly having to
switch
translate
all the time. Yeah, yeah.
That's, I would say, and I guess for parents, you know, when your child lives abroad and they get a partner from that country, in their head is like, that's it. My child is not coming back because they've got a partner from that country. And so I guess when I told them that I had an English boyfriend, probably that came up in their head. But I don't think so. I mean, it's, you know, again, there's the cultural differences. But Peter would love to live in Spain, like tomorrow. He would love it. I guess it's just, you know, a more chilled country. We have less rules. Yeah, it's the UK for us is just rules and rules and rules.
And better weather.
Yeah.
So especially if he likes the heat as well.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. But between the two of you in the relationship, there are no, like, major differences where you say, like, oh, yeah, that's totally my Spanish me. And
he had
to get used to it.
Definitely, yeah. I can be quite fiery and have an argument and, you know, nothing will come out of him. I'll be like, and he would just keep his cool. And that kind of like angers me a bit more because you want to, we had, like Peter and I had this discussion that, we think that English music or British music is better than Spanish.
Oh.
I don't particularly like Spanish music.
Yeah.
And that's because they keep the emotions to themselves so much that then they need to put it into something, and that's songs or poetry, you know. Whereas Spanish people, we're so emotional and we show all our, you know, all our true colors.
Yeah, you can see if someone's angry.
There isn't so much of a nod to it, if it makes any sense. So that can really relate to the two of us, because I'll be very vocal and emotional about how I feel, whereas Peter will be a bit more reserved. And that can cause, you know, a bit of friction for me, because it's kind of like that thing of like, I need to know why you are doing this, or just talk to me.
Oh, that's very interesting. But I guess it comes back to a lot of factors as well, personality.
Definitely.
But I can totally see like the Spanish fire and that there's more of like, you are vocal, you really know how to communicate your emotions and what you feel, because that's just how you grew up anyways. So, fire. Thank you so much for giving us a little bit more of an insight of, the whole cultural side of the Western world. Well, not really, because Spain is still the Western world.
European, maybe? For us, I would put ourselves in like Southern European.
Which is different totally. But just the general differences of different cultures, it's nice to have that coming out more here as well. Hearing a little bit more about like the cultural things of Spain, especially about the pace, the food. But of course, we didn't dive deep into the Spanish history and how everything started, your life there.
Yeah.
But it's not about that now anyways. But I'm pretty sure that there would be plenty of material to have another episode to talk more about the life in Spain and all of that. But thank you so much for having like an insight of your farming, your experience in London, your experience here in New Zealand, and also with like a partner of a different culture, which I can totally relate to. And it's not always easy, I have to say. I always finish my episodes with the quick three questions, which means it's just one word, one sentence answers. So they're just like relatively short and intuitive.
Okay. That's very hard for a Spanish person because...
you want to put it all in
yeah, when you have...
Essay.
No, but when you do Google Translate, it's quite funny because you'll put two words and then translate into like seven different ones. And that's what Peter always says, like, what? How is that possible? I was like, well, yeah, you know.
It's okay. Like if it's not one word or one sentence, sometimes it's also really intriguing and I might ask again and I might be like, oh, explain please.
Okay.
But we just try to find a little word for it rather than a massive explanation in the beginning. Cool. So now since you are deciding, okay, New Zealand won't be forever, what is the country you actually could see yourself retiring or staying and settling down?
Portugal.
Nice. I was thinking maybe Spain, but Portugal. Okay. Yep. Why is Portugal?
So we've been twice and it's very similar to Spain in terms of the character of the people. And it is cheaper to live there. At the same time, salaries are not that great over there. So that's why there's a lot of people from Portugal emigrating to the UK or the parts of Europe. I have this love for old stuff. And the two places that we visited in Portugal, for some people, it might look like a building is, you know, falling apart, collapsing, which it probably is.
Yeah.
At the same time, there's a charm to it. That's what I saw in Portugal. There are so many beautiful old buildings dotted around. And yeah, for some reason, I really liked it there. And the people were really nice. They were really helpful. I pretty much can't speak. I'm learning Portuguese, but at the same time, every time that we've been, I can speak in Spanish to them and they will reply to me in Portuguese and super easy.
Yeah.
It's not hard to communicate. Yeah. So I guess it's the similarities with Spain.
Yeah.
But then the affordability of living there. And for some reason, I love Spain, but I feel it's really weird. I feel that if I go back to Spain, I've kind of like failed. I don't know what it is. It's not about failure, but it's almost like I went back to, to like square zero.
I know what you mean.
So if I went to Spain, I don't think I would go back to my hometown either.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally feel you. It's so hard to put into words, but it's just because you came from a place, you have grown so much in the person you are now, with all the knowledge you have now, with all the people you have met from all over the countries, all over the world, and you just are not the same person anymore. And going back to exactly where you stopped feels like you just delete everything you grew into and you become that same person again. And it's like, you don't want that. You don't want to be that person again. You are happy that you have grown and that you became a completely different version of yourself. So I totally understand that.
Good.
I think I feel the same way. So that's why I can relate very well.
Yeah.
All right. And now I extended it quite a bit.
Okay.
So question number two. What do you miss the most from Spain?
The food. I should say the people first. The food. I miss a lot of things. I miss the food, the people, the summer holidays over there. But I guess it's just childhood memories. And smells. There are smells that I come across here that will bring back memories.
That's actually really beautiful. And I get it, like most people say the food, just because it's such a massive part of your life over there. And it's so different from where we are now. So totally makes sense. Okay, last question. What do you like the most about New Zealand?
Ooh, I don't know. Yeah, it nothing. Is nothing. No, I guess, what do I like the most about New Zealand? I guess the possibility of like hopping on the car and then at least where we live, that you can, in 45 minutes, be in somewhere where you can do a hike or you can go to the beach. And it's the thing about this country is that it's got, so it's an English speaking country, but it doesn't have the weather that the UK has.
Yeah.
So you can actually enjoy like really nice weather and being able to, you know, go to the beach or go for a hike. Also hot springs.
Yeah.
That is one thing that when we leave, I'm going to miss a lot because, that's another thing that I really like about New Zealand, how humble people are and how humble places are, because back in Europe, any sort of hot spring place would be extremely expensive, only affordable for certain people. And here, you know, there's incredible places for very, very like cheap price that you can go and enjoy. And I guess, how untouched New Zealand feels compared to Europe, because where I'm from is so touristy that all our coastline is just blocks of buildings and houses, and it's just so ugly.
Yeah.
And I appreciate how much they respect their outdoors and refuse to do any of that.
I can understand that as well, because coming from Europe, there's a lot of empathy on getting more people into a big city, so higher buildings, making it more like a fast big city with like skyscrapers and stuff, and there are so many beautiful beaches, but as you say, it's just so different from, the landscape here and how the view itself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I enjoy walking on the beach in Spain as well, but very different from New Zealand for sure.
Very, very different.
Thank you so much, Coral.
You're welcome.
Coral. Which is really nice. I love it. Thank you for your time.
No problem.
And for sharing all your knowledge and for sharing your experience. And I'm hoping that people are interested in the whole farming story as well. I know I am, and probably has to be a certain type of person, but I hope it kind of spreads a little bit so that people are more aware as well.
Yes, hopefully. And
I loved finally speaking to a Spanish person as
well. Oh, really? Am I the first one? Yeah. It's not so many of us here.
Yeah, lots of Germans, but not so many Spanish ones. So thanks, everyone, for listening. And I hope you enjoy the rest of the day or wherever you are, whatever you do. Thank you for listening again. Bye.
Bye.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.